We're ready, sir.
May it please the court, I'm Joseph Sanzane, and I represent Mr. Riddle.
Do you care to reserve some rebuttal time, sir?
Your Honor, probably 5 minutes.
5 minutes, yes, sir.
I don't think my argument will be terribly long. Hopefully, it'll be succinct. But the context of this case, I think, is really important because I think the whole matter is really an overreach. It began when Christian Riddle was out with some of his friends, and someone reported to the police that there was a girl with him whose parents were looking for her.
Mr. Sanzo, let me interrupt you because it seems to me, you know, this is a sufficiency argument on appeal, so we look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, and we have a situation where your client unfortunately made some statements, and in those statements he talks about how he and his co-defendant remarked on how these Himalayan bath salts look so much like Molly that they bought some, packaged them in individually, packaged three of them, I believe, and indicated that if somebody had approached them about buying some Molly, they would have sold it to him. So in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, how does that not establish every single element of the offense of possession with intent to distribute an imitation controlled substance?
I will agree that what was there in the backpack meets the definition of what appears to be an imitation substance. I think if we went to Walmart this morning, probably 50% of what they sell there meets that same definition.
So you're the Walmart's counterfeit person.
Probably. That's probably. There's a lot of it, I expect, that's that way. But
of course, he's not speaking for the court.
Yeah. Judge Huff shops there a lot, so I apologize. Yeah.
Or a mini mart or any other place. I mean, since this case came up, I mean, I walked down the aisle. I was in New York City, and everything's displayed there in the display at the Greek restaurant. And probably 20% of that stuff look like a controlled substance. If you just put it in a bag and sat out there on the street with it set next to you, people would probably think you had a bag of drugs there. But we don't have a good conditional statement case in Virginia. And the classic example is a person who goes to a party and maybe there's a girl there and he says, if that guy goes over there and tries to dance with my girlfriend, I'm going to go punch him in the mouth. He's not saying he's going to do it. He's not saying anything is going to happen. But he's saying that if a certain set of circumstances occur, then he's going to do something. He has an intent under that circumstance.
Mr. Sanzone, that is an excellent jury argument. The problem is we're not a jury. The elements of the offense are, and you've conceded it in context, this fits the definition of an imitation controlled substance. So the only thing left are, was your client ever in possession of it, and is there any evidence that they intended to distribute it in some way, shape, or form?
Well, in the possession.
Clearly, he had, by his own statements, he admits co-possessing it with his
possession's not an issue at all.
And that simply leaves the issue of possible sale. And he says, if someone, let's see if I can quote it here. He said, if someone else knew where I could get it, I would have sold it to them. Now, your client asserts that's and you on brief assert that was a purely hypothetical response, which is, you know, for the fact finder to determine whether he's just joking, you know, whether it was a serious statement, I guess. So isn't that kind of where we're at, though? I mean, we're not the fact finder. We weren't there.
No.
We didn't hear the voice inflection, you know, evaluate the credibility of the statement made by the officer as to what your client said?
Well, it's a rendition of a statement that was made by an officer first place. Yes, Judge, I think that's exactly where we are. I think we're just to that narrow point of how do you deal with if? How do you deal with if in these cases? If I had been alive, I would have helped Lee Harvey Oswald assassinate President Kennedy. Does that mean that now I'm conspiring to assassinate the president?
Don't we have an additional step in this case, though, that these bath salts were repackaged by Mr. Riddle and his colleagues to make it look like Molly? Isn't that taking an additional step is not just responding to a hypothetical, they're taking an action that would suggest that they're trying to make these, parade these things as illicit narcotics.
Well, not if you read the entire statement that he made, the exact statement, because he said, we thought it was funny that they look like them.
Well, let's turn it around. Let's say, hypothetically, we're dealing with a situation where somebody's got, you know, a bag of crack cocaine in their pocket, and is arrested. He's clearly in possession. It's clearly a controlled substance. And he says to the police officer, if someone had approached me and asked if I knew where they could score some crack, I'd have sold it to him. Why doesn't that establish their intent to distribute in the abstract?
And so you're taking then a possession case to an intent to distribute case.
Right.
I understand you.
That's what we have here, isn't it?
That's what you
have. The only difference
is
we have an imitation controlled substance here instead of a real controlled substance.
I don't believe so. That's the Stanley case. The Stanley case says you have to have a contemporaneous intent to distribute with possession. And the contemporaneous specific intent, and I think that's a legal matter. That's not a factual matter. It's a legal matter of whether you have the sufficient evidence to make a case. And my point in the beginning was this. If you look at how this all occurred, they're looking for a girl. The girl's not there. So instead of just saying, okay, thank you guys, they call the mother. The mother comes there. They tell the mother. And we advised her that if she drove down the road in the vehicle and there was something in the vehicle, she could possibly be charged for that. So that's how they got consent to search the vehicle. Now they search the vehicle and they find the Himalayan bath salts. And they say, okay, what's this? And they say, well, you know, some stuff we bought, we thought it looked like Molly. Isn't it funny? We thought it was really funny that it looked like that, so we packaged this way. Were you trying to sell it?
Ms. Sanzon, to follow up on Judge Humphrey's question, is that any time that we deal with these kinds of cases where we're talking, where we don't have any, say, real statements on the part of the defendant to indicate a predisposition to distribute the substance involved, we look at other facts and circumstances to determine whether or not they are consistent with distribution. And one of the things that this court always focuses on is packaging, whether or not something is packaged in a way where it could be distributed. How do you deal with that issue? And then I want to follow up a little bit about that.
Back to the Greek restaurant. You know, the things there, if I bought some of those granulated items, they're packaged like a controlled substance.
Okay, then let's take it the next step. In a lot of cases where we're talking about entrapment, the question is whether or not someone is predisposed to do something, not at the suggestion of law enforcement. And in this case, law enforcement asked a question, and their client volunteered an answer which inculpated him, didn't it?
Well, I think a lot of times officers are better at asking questions than children are at answering those questions.
Well, what if, wouldn't we have a different case if the officer said, what were you going to do with this stuff? And they said, we were just fooling around. We didn't have any intention to do anything with this. That would be a real tough case for the government. But in this case, they said, well, if someone had asked us for it, we'd have sold it to them. Doesn't that make it a little bit different?
They kept pressing the point. They kept pressing the point, and I guarantee you that if you went to the high school this morning and the police officers pulled those children out of their classes and looked in their backpack and they found a granola that their mother had packaged for them for school or some other substance that was in there, maybe some styrofoam that had been a packaging material that was broken up and it's in their backpack, and they kept pressing the point with those kids, they're going to get inculpatory statements from those children. So I think the question we have to really ask is, are we going to allow those types of overreaches and those types of pressures in a case like this when they don't get a real answer? If he had said, Judge Humphreys, I think if he had said, look, I was trying to sell it as Molly, you've got me, that's one thing. But when the best they can get out of him after telling the mother, you're going to get arrested if you drive down the road, there might be something in the car, so let me search the car. Now they search the car. And then they said to the kids, okay, this is pretty strange looking. What's going on here? And we don't have the whole context of that police officer's statement. We've got his rendition of what happened. a second officer who arrives. So you've got multiple officers there asking questions, which have been, that's been a consideration in some of the voluntary statement cases that we have. What's the show of force that you have? You have a show of force in this case, which vastly exceeds what's necessary on the, for
that's the Fifth Amendment context. Typically.
But it's not. It is. And I'm not saying that it really applies to this, but I'm saying it's a concern. And you said, look at all the facts and circumstances, and I think that's a circumstance to consider with this. But when the best you can get out of it is if that person goes over there and talks to my girlfriend, I'm going to punch him in the mouth. If somebody walked up to me and said, I'll buy this as Molly, I would have sold it to them. That's the best statement they got. I don't think it's sufficient.
Taking your hypothetical, though, you're saying if that guy messes with my lady, I'm going to go over and punch him in the mouth. Isn't that a little different than if he comes with a pair of boxing gloves on and says, all right, if he goes over there and messes with my lady, I'm going to punch him in the mouth, and he's already got the boxing gloves on, ready to do it?
Mere preparation is not sufficient to convict him. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Ms. Johnson?
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Victoria Johnson for the Commonwealth. Just to start briefly, if there was any difficulty with the voluntariness of this statement, that could have been litigated below in a motion to suppress. There's nothing in the record indicating that the officers in any way badgered this defendant.
Let me follow up on a question I asked Mr. Sanzone. I brought up the issue of predisposition.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, would you agree that there is nothing in the record to suggest any predisposition prior to the question being asked of Mr. Sanzone's client? In other words, set aside the packaging. Just set that aside.
Okay.
Is there anything else in the record to suggest predisposition prior to that question being asked of the boys? What were you going to do with this stuff? And I say predisposition, intention to distribute it.
Well, Judge, if I set aside the packaging?
Yeah, just you set aside the packaging.
Because before the officer asked them what they were going to do with it, they said that they thought it was funny how it looked like Molly, and so they packaged it to look more like Molly. And then, so I kind of have a hard time divorcing those two, but until the officer asked him, all that I have, I'm looking at page 19 of the joint appendix. The officer says, I asked Riddle if he was planning on selling them as Molly. Riddle replied, quote, I was not showboating it around, but if someone asked me where to get it, I would have sold it to them. So I think that's the statement.
So would it be fair to say that your case rises or falls based upon the packaging itself?
Well, the packaging and the statement, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I don't think that I think that's our evidence of intent to distribute, is the statement packaging.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but let me see if I understand your position now after in the light of Judge Alston's questions. Mr. Sanzone's conceded the point about it being an invitation control substance,
yes.
So I don't think there's any issue there. So that leaves us with both possession and the intent to distribute. Now, as to possession, we have the fact that it's physically on the person of his co-defendant,
mm-hmm.
and his statement that they basically purchased it together and packaged it together. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the evidence of possession.
And that's similar to the Archer case that I cited in my brief.
Right. So that leaves us with the intent to distribute, and that
yes.
comes, as I understand your argument, from both the packaging, the fact that they packaged it in individual packages so it could be distributed, mm-hmm. and then the statement that while I wasn't basically shopping it around or showboating, as he put it, he wasn't advertising it for
it.
Sale, but if somebody had said, I'd like to buy some, they would have sold it to him.
Yes, Your Honor.
In a nutshell?
Yes, Your Honor. And I also rely on Officer Pavia's testimony that when he saw it, he immediately recognized it as Molly that was packaged for sale. Or he thought that it was Molly packaged for sale. That's what kind of made his antenna go up, so to speak. So that's the Commonwealth's position there. As far as the defendant's argument, I think this is kind of where the defendant kind of landed at the end of prior argument, that this was a mere conditional statement. That was a hypothesis of innocence that was rejected by the fact finder.
But whether someone says something in a jocular manner or a serious statement is a seems to be a purely a question of fact.
It is a question of fact, and that was, as I said, determined by the fact finder. The fact finder did not believe that, and that's completely consistent with drug distribution. I don't know of many cases that we see where a drug dealer is advertising that he has an illicit substance for sale out in the open, you know, expressly. I think that a lot of drug transactions occur when someone asks a drug dealer if he can buy a substance. So I think that this is pretty consistent with the ordinary kind of intent to distribute case. If the court has more questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I think that's my position. It's pretty straightforward.
Very well.
Okay.
Hearing none, we thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you
Mr.
very
Sansone.
Much.
I think the complete rule on circumstantial evidence is that all evidence must be consistent with guilt. And if you look at these statements here, we tend to make a lot of assumptions about it, the exact statements that were made. But Officer Pavey on page 15 of the appendix, line 9, says, I asked him what he was planning on doing with it. That's 7, actually. He said, I was not showbaiting around, but if someone else knew where to get it. He doesn't say if someone knew this was Molly or someone.
Well, you didn't finish the sentence. If someone else knew where to get it, I would have sold it to them.
Yes.
That's the key phrase, it seems to me, because you know that's an expression, or at least the Commonwealth's position is that's an expression of his state of mind, his intent to sell the substance if someone had approached him.
And I didn't mean to hide anything by not going to them. But,
I'm sure
but,
you did.
But you get,
I've known you a long time, Mr. Sansone.
But you get it twice. You get it. You don't get the drug. You don't get Molly. You don't get...
Well, but it was in the context of the talking about the bath salts, right? I mean, that's what the officer was asking him about.
Of talking about the bath salts. What if he had just sold somebody the bath salts? Is there a prohibition against him selling the bath salts?
If he's claiming it to be Molly, yes.
But if he makes no representations and he's selling the bath salts, is he in any different position than the merchant that sold the bath salts to him?
But to the extent that there may have been confusion on page 15, page 19 seems to clarify that, doesn't it? Beginning at line 21, I asked Riddle if he was planning on selling them as Molly. Riddle replied, quote, I was not showboating it around, but if someone asked me where to get it, I would have sold it to them, end quote.
Right. So I think the officers made two statements that aren't necessarily, don't necessarily completely comport with one another. Back to my original statement about circumstantial evidence, all evidence must be consistent with guilt and inconsistent with innocence. There's that first statement that I think is consistent with innocence. Maybe he doesn't understand what the officer's saying to him. Maybe he's not even listening when he gets the second statement. I mean, you're dealing with kids that are out there, a number of police officers asking a lot of questions and things are being said. Then you go to page 18 with Officer Pavey on cross, and I'm asking him about what exactly he was saying. And so I said, he never told you that he told anybody he was going to do that. That's line 10 through 12. No, sir. 22. But he never said, I'm going to. He said, if something happened, I would. Yes, sir. 24. Back again to the standard on circumstantial evidence. And I guess, Judge Humphreys, the whole thing to me is, what can you get them to say? What can a police officer get a person to say in these circumstances? And back to Judge Alston's questioning about predicates and what was going on. You know, they could have observed these children. I've seen a lot of cases where they say, I sat in a parking lot across the street and I watched people go over to them, hand them something, they seemed to get something, they drove away. That happened two or three times. I went over and the investigation began. So there's some indication of something that's consistent with drug activity. How about checking the cell phone? You know, there's nothing in the cell phone here. And God knows, in these children's cell phones, you've got everything you can possibly imagine. And if he was doing something that was out of the way concerning this, it would certainly have appeared in the cell phone. Or any money that was on him, or anything, any of the things that we normally look at in the cases where we talked about intent to distribute. So we say that all the evidence was not consistent with guilt. In fact, it was consistent with innocence in many ways. And I thank you for the opportunity to be here. I always enjoy being with you.
Thank you. We'll step down and greet counsel and thereafter take up Haley versus the Commonwealth.